Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your hosts, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows and Cody Kellum of Born and Raised Outdoors.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. Glad to be back in the recording chair again. It's been a minute since I recorded a McManus episode, and I figured I'd better jump back on it. It'll also give me the chance to kind of catch you guys up to what we're doing here at Stalker and what's kind of going on our end on a personal, you know, part of my life there. Hopefully it doesn't bore you guys to sleep, but I know when I'm listening to podcasts, one of the things I always enjoy is, you know, hearing about what's going on with the host and what have you. So it's June 25th today that I'm recording. We just got back from the High Country shoot in Colorado. Had a blast up there. We went up there Thursday, my son Travis and I, and set up our booth up there Friday morning. But Thursday evening, we got a chance to shoot a couple of courses. And if you've never been up there, you really need to make a point of getting up there. It's a beautiful setting up on in the flat tops there in Colorado. It's north of 8,000 feet in elevation, right there amongst all the aspens, and really beautiful, you know, cool course to walk through as far as from a temperature standpoint. It's in the trees for the bulk of the time, and so even if it's hot out, you're shaded and very relaxing atmosphere there. I think there was over 550 shooters this year, so a huge trad event without a doubt. And a lot of vendors showed up. I haven't been there in a couple of years. So the amount of vendors there surprised me. I mean, it was probably double the number of vendors that were there the last time that I was there, which was a great thing to see, and very well supported. I got a chance to meet a whole bunch of new people, had a great time doing that. As I alluded to, it was just my son Travis and I up there. My wife is down in Costa Rica for a couple of months, actually 8.5 weeks to be precise, with the girls. I had promised her that when we sold her place in California that we've been eyeballing, you know, buying a vacation rental as an investment property in Hawaii for years now. And unfortunately, we just got priced out of the game there. So we had thought about Costa Rica on a handful of occasions. And so when we realized it was just unattainable in Hawaii, we looked at Costa Rica and ended up buying a place down there this spring. So at some point here, we'll have that, well, some point pretty soon here, we'll have that place available for rent as soon as I can evict her from it. Man, she's like a lizard. She just loves the sun down there. And, you know, it's funny. She would never sign off on me leaving for 2 months going hunting, but not a problem to go down to Costa Rica for 2 months. Although, in all fairness, she would get stuck with three kids, and I'm getting one. So, you know, probably not a fair shake there nonetheless. But she's getting back on August 4th, and then I leave August 8th. I drew a tag in Nevada. I'm really excited. I'm kind of, it's not 100% yet, but it's like 99%. So Larry Jones got in touch with me before the draw, and he had 6 points and offered to put in with me if I'd take him up there to my spot to take him hunting one last kind of hurrah there. He's getting up there. He's 76 this year. And he's like, hey, I don't want to take my points with me when I go. So he was kind enough to share his points with me. And we were going to film it, and I was going to do a entry for the Full Draw film tour with it. And I had a whole storyline played out in my head. He was the guy that inspired me to get into mule deer hunting in 1987, so it was 31 years ago. His VHS, Hunting Open Country Mule Deer, had come out, and I walked into my local archery shop the summer after I graduated from high school, and it was playing on the TV there, and I sat down and soaked it up, and that inspired me to the following year go up to Oregon, Eastern Oregon, and I was fortunate enough to shoot my first mule deer up there, and that got me hooked, and it's been a lifelong passion ever since. So, to get a chance to hunt with somebody who influenced me so heavily back when I was young is a pretty neat opportunity for me. So I'm really looking forward to that. And Zach Henderson, who filmed the last couple times I was up there in Nevada, is going to come along with me. So it's going to be really fun to get him up there on the mountain again. And he does a fantastic job filming. So I'm really excited there. And so I was talking to Larry a few weeks or a couple of weeks after we had found out we drew, and he told me, he goes, Bowhunter TV really wants to film this and use this for their TV show. And it's like, wow, that what an opportunity. Have to be a couple of compromises in products that I normally use that are would be a conflict with sponsors there of the TV show. So, I mean, that's kind of the TV game. I've done it before. I went to Africa back in 2005 on a hunt there, and they got to pay their bills. So there's a few products there that I haven't used before, namely Browning's clothing apparel, in Mossy Oak, which is honestly not my first choice of camouflage for sure, and especially a camouflage pattern. It just tends to be too dark, for this Western stuff, but we'll make do. Worst things have happened. At least I don't have to wear a siren on my head or something like that. But any case, so that one, I drew Nevada, got that hunt all lined up, super psyched about that. I did not get a mule deer tag in the draw and was sweating bullets because my group, hunting party group, ended up one deer voucher short of the three of us all being able to get on the mountain. So for about, what is it, maybe 3 weeks now, I've been sweating bullets and stressing out and worried sick and all that good stuff. And when I was coming down off the mountain, I drove back into cell range after being out of cell range up there at the high country shoot, and my phone goes off and got a text that I got a voucher. So I'm super excited there. Got two fantastic mule deer hunts lined up for this fall, and then I cashed in my elk points this year, so I've got a really good elk hunt. Not monster bulls, but lots of bulls. So that's kind of what is my speed there. I just want to put some meat in the freezer there and get my first elk with my stick bow. I've shot, I don't know, maybe five with my compound, but it's been a long time since I've had elk meat that I've shot in my own freezer. So it's high time there that I get that done. I should have, in the beginning here, asked you guys or thanked you guys for the reviews that you have given, and the ones of you that haven't done a review, if you guys wouldn't mind taking the time to hop on iTunes. It just takes a second, and do a review there for the Western Bowhunter podcast. It'll help kind of get the message out there. That'd be greatly appreciated. Free content for you guys here, so just taking a couple seconds. I know it's kind of a pain in the butt, but get on there if you would and give the podcast a rating. That'd be much appreciated. Help inspire me to continue to pound these things out for you guys. Got my llamas out on a fishing trip. What was that? Couple of weeks ago, couple of weekends ago, and they did fantastic. We did about 5 miles, and a lot of it was off trail. Well, not a lot. A couple of miles was off trail. So 5 miles on the way in. It was supposed to only be three, but we missed our fork in the trail. So we had our choice of dropping, I don't know, maybe 800 or 1,000 feet in elevation, and then going, then climbing it back up again to get to the lake, or basically side hilling around through this the top end of this canyon. And so we opted to do that, ended up in a lot of blowdowns, as you might imagine, in Colorado with all the beetle kill. The llamas did great on that. Once they were kind of like, I don't know about that. On the first log, they had to jump over. And then once they cleared one, it was, no problem. I had some creek crossings, which llamas typically can be challenging to, they'll do it, but they don't like getting their feet wet. And even more so than that, they don't like going into mud, like mud holes there. So there's a lot of muddy spots on the trail. And honestly, those are more challenging than the creek crossings or the log jumps there. But they were champions. I was really proud of them, and especially considering it's been a minimum, of 2 years since they'd been packed. And, I haven't worked with them at all since November when I picked them up. So that was a relief. I had a little bit of anxiety about how well they'd work out. Still a little bit, on how they'll do on a 10-mile hike versus a 5-mile hike, but we'll have to see on that. I'm very fortunate the people that are boarding them live at 8,500 feet, so they're even higher than I'm at. So they're already acclimated for the elevation, just need to get them some weight on their backs on a more regular basis. And I was talking to the guy there, and he said that he'd be willing to throw some pack saddles on them and put some weight on them when he was taking their other llamas there for conditioning hikes. So it looks like I might be able to continue to maximize my time building bows and have my critters get a workout in my absence. So I'm happy about that. It'll be nice to have well-conditioned animals here come hunting time. On other notes, heading down for a 3D shoot Wednesday night down there in Golden. RMS Gear hosts a 3D shoot up in like a league, I guess, up in Golden there at a range up there. And so I'm going to try to find that. And my crew and I are going to head down there and hopefully go poke a bunch of holes in some foam. And it's a hour and a half plus drive each way for me to get down there. But there's nothing like, that really good realistic practice. And so it's hunting season. It's time to do it. Well, let's get on with, I've given you 10 minutes of recap here. Let's jump in with the Patrick McManus. This one is from The Grasshopper Trap, and it is the first story called The Skunk Ladder. Driving out to the country the other day, my wife Bun and I passed the aromatic remains of at least 10 road-killed skunks. Must be a good year for skunks, I observed. Looks like a bad one for them, if you ask me, Bun said. I mean, there's obviously a large skunk population this year, I sniffed, instantly realizing that I shouldn't have sniffed, because at that moment we were passing another skunk carcass. Just then a live skunk scurried out in front of the car. I swerved to the left and back to the right, and we managed to screech safely around it. Bun screeches quite often, but it was the first time I had screeched in years. Goodness, that was close, Bun said. What would you have done if you'd have hit that skunk with the car? The only decent thing, I replied. I'd have stopped and buried it in the ditch. I might even have buried the skunk along with it. You talk as if you've had a lot of experience with skunks, she said. You bet, I said. Mostly when I was a kid. You mean I never told you about the skunk ladder? Boy, do you have a treat in store for you. Sorry I mentioned it, she mumbled, possibly in an attempt to conceal her intense interest in the bizarre tale. As I told Bun, my friend Crazy Eddie Molden and I were sitting on the Molden corral fence one summer afternoon trying to think of something to do. This was shortly after I had nearly drowned in the creek while testing Eddie's deep sea diving apparatus, and after we had crashed in our homemade plane during takeoff from the roof of the Molden barn, and after our submarine had failed to surface with us in the pond. But before Mr. Molden started being treated by old Doc Mosby for a mysterious nervous condition, I recall mentioning to Eddie that his father seemed to be awfully jumpy that summer, and Eddie said he had noticed it too, and wondered if it might be caused by not eating vegetables. Even as we sat on the fence, Mr. Molden came by on his tractor and stopped to study us suspiciously. "What are you two up to now?" he demanded.
"Nothing, Pa," Crazy Eddie said. "Just trying to think of something to do."
Mr. Olden shuddered.
"Well, when you think of it, you let me know before you start to do it. You hear?"
"Sure, Pa," Eddie said. "I guess what we'll do is go dig in the dirt. We've been talking about doing that."
"Okay," said Mr. Molden, shifting his tractor into gear.
"Just don't build nothing." He drove off.
"What kind of hole are we going to dig?" I asked Eddie.
He stared off into space, his face enveloped in that dreamy expression that always accompanied one of his wondrous new ideas.
"A big hole," he said. "A real big hole."
Digging the hole occupied us for most of a week. One of the problems with digging a big hole is that it is difficult to know when it is big enough and deep enough. There are basically two kinds of holes dug in the ground. One, applied holes, such as for posts, wells, mines, etc., and two, holes for holes' sake. Eddie and I were digging one of the latter. Eventually, the hole was so deep we could barely heave shovelfuls of dirt over its side. At that point, Eddie judged it to be finished. Since Eddie had insisted that we keep the sides of the hole squared up, we had to pull ourselves out of it on a rope, one end of which was tied to a pile of stumps nearby. The stump pile also served to screen our digging activities from the view of Mr. Molden, who was cutting hay in a field on the far side of the farm. As Eddie often pointed out, any kind of engineering feat should be screened from the eyes of the engineer's parents. That way, you could concentrate on your work and didn't have to be answering a lot of dumb questions all the time. We were immensely proud of the hole, and I still don't believe I've ever seen a nicer one. It was so nice, in fact, that Eddie abandoned his view of its purely aesthetically pleasing hole and began to think of it as practical.
"You know what we could do with this hole?" he said. "We could make a wild animal trap of it, you know, like Frank Buck does in Africa. We could cover it with branches and leaves and grass, and wild animals would come along and fall into it. Then we could tame them and teach them to do tricks."
Eddie fairly glowed with enthusiasm at his idea, as his idea began to take shape.
"And then we could start our own circus," he went on. "We could charge people to see our animals to do tricks. We might even get rich. Gosh, I bet we could catch a deer or an elk or a bear or a mountain lion or one of your father's cows," I put in.
Eddie's glow of enthusiasm faded.
"Yeah," he said, "I never thought of that."
Both of us stood there silently for a moment, thinking of Mr. Molden staring down into the hole at one of his milk cows. It was unpleasant to think about.
"Tomorrow we better fill that hole back in," Eddie said.
"How about tonight? Maybe a cow will fall in tonight."
Eddie pondered this possibility for a moment.
"I've got it," he said. "There's a big old door out behind the barn. We'll drag that down here and put it over the hole." And that is what we did before knocking off work for the day, secure in the knowledge that the door would save us from the uncomfortable experience of watching his father undergo one of his fits of hysteria. Early the next morning, Eddie and I headed for the big hole, prepared to start the tedious task of undigging it. As we approached the excavation, a familiar odor reached our nostrils.
"Must be a skunk around here someplace," Eddie said.
"Maybe it's in the hole," I said.
"Couldn't be. We covered it with the door."
Nevertheless, the skunk was in the hole. He had apparently found an open space under the door, slipped in for a look around, and plummeted the 8 feet or more to the bottom of the hole. Oddly, he did not seem to be frightened of us. Even stranger, for we did not know that skunks were great diggers, he had hollowed out a huge cavern under one side in an attempt to dig his way out of the hole.
"We can't fill in the hole with the skunk in there," I said. "How are we going to get him out?"
"Maybe one of us could drop down in the hole, grab him real quick before he sprays, and then throw him out," Eddie said.
"I'll yell real loud so he'll look at me and won't notice when you jump in and grab him, and..."
"I don't like that idea," I said. "Think of something else."
"I got it," Eddie exclaimed, snapping his fingers. "We'll go up to my dad's shop and build a ladder. Then we'll stick it down the hole and hide someplace while he climbs the ladder. A skunk should be able to figure out how to climb a ladder."
Eddie and I were working on the ladder when his father walked into the shop.
"I thought I told you two not to build anything," he growled.
"What's that?"
"Just a skunk ladder," Crazy Eddie said.
"Oh," his father said. "Well, don't build nothing else unless you tell me first." Eddie and I went back to the hole and stuck the ladder in it.
The skunk showed no inclination to climb in, choosing instead to hide in the cavern it had hollowed out. Just then we heard Eddie's father yelling at us, "What did you mean, skunk ladder?" We peeked out around the stump pile, and there was Mr. Molden striding across the pasture toward us. "Quick," said Eddie, "help me put the door back over the hole." We threw the door over the top of the hole, neatly hiding it from view. But before we could think of a good explanation for a big pile of dirt out in the corner of the pasture, Molden charged up. "Now what?" he cried. "Where did that dirt come from? What's my door doing out here?" He reached down and grabbed the edge of the door. "Stop, Pa, don't," Eddie yelled, rushing forward. From that point on, the actions of the party involved all blurred together. It's difficult to recall the exact sequence of action, but I will try. Mr. Molden grabbed the door, flipped it off the hole. Then he said, "Smells like a skunk," at which time he shot out of sight, leaving his straw hat suspended in the air for perhaps a quarter of a second. Later, I deduced that Mr. Molden had stepped on the edge of the hole beneath which the skunk had hollowed out its cavern. A cloud of dust puffed up out of the hole when Mr. Molden hit the bottom. Then he yelled several swear words with the word skunk mixed in with them. Next, there were a lot of earthly scrambling sounds, and Mr. Molden came clawing his way out of the side of the hole, but the dirt gave way, and he fell back in, saying something like, "Oof!" It's important, perhaps, to realize that all this activity so far had taken place in a span of no more than 4 seconds. Eddie, meanwhile, charged forward, yelling, "Pa! Pa! Don't hurt him!" He was standing at the top of the ladder when the skunk rushed up that contrivance and emerged from the cloud of dust. Startled, not wanting the skunk to reverse ends and spray him, Eddie grabbed the little animal by the head. The skunk started scratching and biting, so Eddie threw it back down in the hole, where its arrival was followed by a sound. Where its arrival was followed by a savage bellow from Mr. Molden, who, to our surprise, then came racing up the skunk ladder himself. This was oh my goodness. This was a signal for Eddie and me to start running, which we did, and we continued running until the thunderous sounds of Mr. Bolden's clodhopper boots faded behind us, and still we ran on, finally outdistancing even the nostril-searing smell of Eddie's father. Eddie eventually made his way home and placed himself under the protective custody of his mother until Mr. Bolden's rage subsided into the odd little facial tick that was to remain with them for several months. In the ruckus at the skunk ladder, Eddie had been hit in the face with a slight charge of skunk spray. Worried at first that the spray might affect his brain, Mr. and Mrs. Molden finally assumed there would be no lasting ill effects. 20 years later, however, Crazy Eddie became a PhD in chemistry. Wow. McManus does not disappoint yet again. I hope you guys enjoyed that one and could understand between me wheezing and laughing there. All right, I'm out and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for listening.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please subscribe and take a few seconds to review the podcast and share it with your friends on your social media platforms. This will help us in the podcast rankings and will help us grow. If you have a topic or a person you'd like to hear from in a future episode, please email south@stalkerstickbows.com with podcast in the subject line. You can further support the podcast by picking up a Western Bowhunter Podcast t-shirt or a window sticker from the Stalker store at stalkerstickbows.com. Thanks for your support. Too many years I've passed me by.